Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio.
Radio.
Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here is the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
Everybody out there in Blog Talk Radio land, this is Gray and Ideas Foodie Radio Network, and I'm Gray and Ideas, as the man said, and welcome to another Saturday morning of foodie fun, we hope, and thank you for joining us again this week. Last week, if you listened in or tried to listen in, we had all kinds of technical sound quality issues, which is par for the course around here, but hopefully everything is working this morning and we won't have any echoing going on. It sounded like last week we were talking from a cave somewhere. But thank you for joining us. As you can see, if you're listening in right now, who our guests are this week, we're going from one extreme to another, from seafood to herbs to Western music. And we have Mike Babcock of Oregon Seafoods joining us today, who's going to be talking about their seafood products in a pouch, which is actually pretty cool. If you haven't seen it, check them out. And then we also, our second guest will be Jeff and Elise of Oshala Farms, and we'll be talking about herbs. And they have a farm in Oregon where they grow herbs and kind of interesting process that I didn't know about, and that'll be an interesting topic. And then last but not least, last week, Jenny Fisher was supposed to join us, and because of technical difficulties, we had to delay her a week, but she's coming on. She's got some Western music for us, really good stuff this week. You're going to like her music. I think some of the best that she's ever done, and she's got a new movie project. It's a Western movie, so that's our lineup today, and stick with us for the next hour and a half. We'll be talking about food, fun, and friends, and speaking of friends, if I press this button, I should have Laurie, the Food News Jersey-style girl. Good morning, Laurie.
Good morning to you.
How are you this morning? Everything going okay?
I'm wonderful.
Yes, you are. Oh, I don't see my sidekick, Aaron, here yet. He's always late to the date, but he'll probably show up here soon because I got a text message from him that says, I will be on the show for sure. So for sure means he should be here, but he's always late. So we'll continue without him. And I don't know if you heard, Laurie, about the intro, but sounds like the phones are working and the mics are working and everything's working good today. So we're going to try to pull this show off, hopefully without a glitch. So while we're waiting for Aaron, you got any quick food news stories you want to tell us?
I sure do. I have a whole bunch of them today.
Oh, good.
Okay, here we go. Well, as you know and other people know, and I found out from when your stepdaughter Katie came to visit, we like butter. So I found this article. You don't, but I love butter. It says here, slather it on, baby. Butter reaches a 40-year high. Butter's back and with a creamy vengeance. Foodies praise its flavor. Purists praise its freedom from trans fats. And an annual per capita butter consumption in the U.S. has risen 25% in the last decade to a 40-year high, according to the American Butter Institute, which I didn't
know. Well, the way you use butter, he says increased 25%. You probably make up about 18% of that.
I think Katie's up there with me.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if we talked about this before. I don't think we did on the show, but we have pound cake. First of all, when you make that pound cake, how much butter goes into the pound cake? What, a stick and a half or two sticks?
No, two sticks. tell the story because it is kind of.
Well, I'm going to tell the story. So two sticks go into the actual recipe, and then you and Katie were taking additional butter and melting a stick and melting it, so you were having butter on your butter pound cake. So, yeah, you had something to do with this. I know Paula Deen probably had a lot to do with it, too. Everybody got all mad at her because she was using so much butter. But yes, you do. And you know what? What we buy, Blue Bonnet butter at Walmart for, 99 cents for four sticks? So you can't beat the price of butter.
You can't beat it. I know. It was 98 cents. And we made three pound cakes while she was here in a week. And I still lost weight. Go figure.
and by the way, we actually, through all that, we able to eat those pound cakes in, 2 days?
Each one? We did each one. 2 days.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
So anyway, I didn't know there was such a thing as a Butter Institute. You said that a minute ago. So what did the Butter Institute have to say?
I didn't know there was one either. It says, our sales have been growing by double digits every year, says Albert Strauss. He's the owner of the Strauss Family Creamery. And he said, especially among chefs, of course, it was created 20 years ago at the suggestion of famed California chef Alice Waters, who wanted a locally produced European-style butter with high fat content. So, the Strauss Family Creamery sells approximately 500,000 pounds of butter each year, including gourmet and the European style.
Speaking of butter, Aaron has just joined us, and Aaron, you want to butter us up? We're talking about butter.
Yeah, I heard really good butter stuff about butter and stuff. And, I'm trying to kill myself right now while I'm driving. So,
the story you missed is butter sales are up 25% over the last, I don't know how long it was, but everybody's using butter.
Gourmet butter.
Gourmet,
is that what?
Gourmet, he's right.
Gourmet butter. And here's what's going to be funny. Here's what's going to sound even crazy. The paleo movement has driven butter sales up.
Really?
Are you serious?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Because grass-fed butter is one of the few good fat oils that you can use.
I thought you guys were on olive oil. It's butter you use in that paleo diet?
No. It's mostly olive oil, coconut oil. You know, those are the things that you typically want to use. However, if you're going to use butter, because butter does have a very specific flavor, it adds a specific flavor to your food.
Right.
If you're going to use butter, you have to use butter from a grass-fed cow.
Oh, interesting.
I did not know that. So is that what gourmet butter is?
No, gourmet butter is the fact that they took regular butter that you can get for $1.19 at the store, and they put gourmet on the label.
You're probably close to being right. I bet you're right. Put it in a fancy box and call it gourmet, right?
That's it.
Well, next time I'm in New Jersey, I'm going to go to King's and buy some nice gourmet butter.
Well, we were talking before you got here, Aaron. We bought Blue Bonnet butter for 97 cents for four sticks you know, I know that's not gourmet, but that's a pretty good price for butter.
Yeah.
It's great price for butter. And it's real butter.
Any more butter story, Laurie?
Oh, if I can finish, but did Aaron want to say something?
Oh, no, he always wants to say something, but we don't care. Finish the story.
We're listening to Laurie now. Laurie time.
Thank you. It's Laurie time.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Aaron, I have to promise you, though, next time when we finally meet, I'm going to have a nice pound cake for you.
Oh, my goodness. Is it,
you're going to die.
Do you make, like, a sour cream pound cake?
No, there's no sour cream in it. It's just, it's a lot of butter and oil, and there's 5 flavor extracts in it.
Nice.
Actually, butter extract is one of them. I never even knew they made butter extract because I'm not really a big baker. But yes, they make butter extract and rum. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had a sour cream pound cake?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, it's so good.
That is my all-time favorite pound cake. Sour cream pound cake. Oh yeah, it doesn't get any better than that.
I'll have to look up a nice recipe one. I'll bring that. So we'll have 2. I'll bring mine. I'll bring a sour cream one for you.
I'll eat both. Don't worry. There will be nothing paleo involved in my life at that time. But you know, my thought is every once in a while, if someone would have presented a caveman with a pound cake, do you think he would have said no?
Uh-oh. Of course not.
You crazy?
He would have eaten the crap out of it. So it's not necessarily that the diet or the caveman ate a specific way because that was all that because they chose it. That was just all they get their hands on. Man, caveman getting rock candy and pound cake, he would have been just as fat and out of shape as the rest of us.
You know what? Think about that. That bundt cake is kind of shaped like the wheel, so they were close. They could have actually hauled it out and poured some pound cake mix in there and made themselves a pound cake.
Do you think we could label one the caveman cake because it is shaped like a wheel?
Yeah, we should do
sure.
that.
That's our new one. We just poured the caveman cake.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Laurie, I know how you are. You don't like to finish your story, so do you want to finish the butter story?
Sure. It says, like margarine, butter is rich in fat, but it's all natural fat, not trans fat. That's one reason for the boosting of the butter sales. Another reason is the, quote, foodie revolution. A whole generation of kids are growing up with the Food Network, she tells ABC, and there are more gourmet cooks, both men and women. So consumers are more aware than ever before of what they're putting in their mouths. Referring to margarine and butter, read the labels. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see the difference between the two products. I cannot eat margarine.
Well,
I know my mother
I grew up on margarine, and nothing's wrong with me, but my mother used margarine all the time. Back then, they said it was better than butter, and then they found out later that butter is better than margarine because margarine is basically made out of oil and all kinds of hydrogenated stuff.
I also think that your mom was putting lead in your margarine.
She probably was. Okay, is that the end of that butter story?
No.
Oh, look what
it
is now. Okay, I want you to tell the celery story before we have our first guest.
Oh, okay. Here, let me see. Okay, I gotta find
obviously,
it.
Obviously, you can't find it.
I found it. Okay. Apples walk away with most health alkaloids, and spinach leads to healthy veggie brigade.
Alkaloids, you say?
Accolades.
Okay, go ahead.
What? Compared to them, celery is somewhat unsung. But once you read its incredible and nearly endless list of health benefits, you will quickly join its growing list of lovers.
Did you know this, by the way, Aaron, that celery is so good, is good for you?
You probably know.
I knew that celery is high in fiber and has absolutely zero calories, and it's a great filler. I know that, but I don't know about anything else it's good for.
All right, well, listen, listen closely to this.
Okay, and now behind this door.
No, sometimes like I have this thing. I love celery. Like I'll if I'm bored or something, I'm kind of like, oh, I think I'll just chew on a celery stick. So, I'm reading the article and I'm laughing, and I said, wait till I read the story on the air today. And he goes, what? I said, I'll tell you. It says, celery is a great choice.
Is it still healthy if you put peanut butter and raisins?
Oh, yeah, I love it with peanut butter. Oh, my God, I love it with peanut butter. That's my favorite.
Yes, I do it. You too? Aaron, you like with peanut butter too?
Absolutely.
Is it a guy thing?
I don't know, but it doesn't get much better than celery and peanut butter.
No, you're right. That is the best snack ever.
Banging her face off because I'm talking about celery and peanut butter. she's not down with the celery and peanut butter, apparently, but that's the best to me.
All right, Laurie, so tell us the health benefits of celery.
Okay, here we go. Celery is a great choice if you're watching your weight. One large stalk contains only 10 calories. See? So there is calories in it. So, you add celery to your shopping list and enjoy it in your salads, soups, and stir fries. I didn't think it had any calories.
Well, now we know. So, what's the health benefit?
Celery reduces inflammation. If you're suffering from joint pains, lung infections, asthma, or acne, eating more celery will bring much better relief. Oops, I just clicked. Oops, one second. Here we go.
That's all right. We have our guest ready. Okay, just take your time.
Uh-oh. It helps you calm down. Celery for stress relief. Oh, yeah, it says. The minerals in celery, especially magnesium, and the essential oil in it, soothes the nervous system. So if you enjoy a celery-based snack in the evening, you will certainly sleep better. See, I didn't know that.
Well, what was about the aphrodisiac? That's the part I want you to tell.
Oh, jeez. Down a little ways.
Whatever it is, it's a lie.
No. It's a proven fact. Listen to this. If you want to amp up your sex life, and this
direction.
Is...
He says it goes the opposite direction. All right, Laurie, why is it an aphrodisiac?
It says it's not just your stay. It actually boosts your arousal levels. They are released when you chew on the celery stalk. Didn't I just say I'm always walking on chewing on the celery stalk?
And there you go. There's the line I wanted her to use. I was waiting for it, Aaron. She loves to put celery in her mouth. I wonder why.
Celery so much. So now we understand. Now we know the only reason she's around you. Because you keep celery around for your peanut butter arousal. So now you've got celery and peanut butter combined as an aphrodisiac with someone chewing and arousing. This is getting weird.
This is still a morning show.
It used to be. Anyway, okay, is there any more to the celery? Because I've got our guest waiting in the wings, and he's probably listening to the celery story. And says, oh, my God, why am I on this show?
Well, there's more, but that's okay. I can catch up later on it. It also
right.
combats cancer. So there you go.
Go hold your celery, and I'm going to bring on our first guest. We're going to go from celery to seafood, and we have Mike Babcock, easy for me to say, calling in from SeafarePacific.com and Oregon Seafood. And if you look on our site here, I posted their website, and they got some really unique products that I want to talk to Mike about. And I actually have never tried them before, and I saw this on Kickstarter, and hopefully everything's working okay. And good morning, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for listening to our story.
Yes, welcome to the show. I wanted to have you on because I saw you on Kickstarter, and we'll get to that in a minute about your Kickstarter project, but I wanted to have you on to tell a little bit about Oregon Seafood and Seafair Pacific, about the products you have, really unique seafood products in a pouch. And if you could come on, tell us about your company, where you're located, and how you got into seafood and the pouch business.
Sure. Oregon Seafoods is located on the south coast of Oregon. We operate out of Coos Bay, and we've been around for nearly 4 years now. We actually started the business mainly to pack seafood for other folks, other companies, and what we found was they couldn't keep us busy. So about 2 years ago, the crew and I got together, and we decided to get a little ambitious and launch our own brand, Seafair Pacific. And we started out with fish pouches. Like albacore tuna is what most people know us for. And
right.
then this last year, a little less than a year ago, we decided to get into seafood-based meals. We feel there's more opportunities there for us. And so we launched 6 new seafood-based soups and sauces in a pouch. They're innovative. They actually have the seafood in the pouch. You simply heat and serve. 90 seconds in the microwave, or boil them for 3 minutes, pour it out, and enjoy the meal.
And these are shelf-stable for, like, how long in the pouch?
2 years.
Wow. Have you had these, Aaron?
Pretty incredible.
Aaron, have you seen these in the store?
No, I haven't. I don't know if I have. I guess it's possible. Is it seasoned? I mean, I didn't get a chance to review any of the links because my life has been absolutely flipped upside down over the last week or so. But
maybe it's because I haven't either, and I saw it online and saw the information. And, Mike, where is your product sold now?
Okay, primarily we're in the West. We have some distribution in the East. For instance, all the Sprout stores in the Southwest carry the product. The vitamin cottage stores by Natural Grocers, they're taking all the products here in about 3 or 4 weeks. There's a lot of independent co-ops and smaller chains like that around, especially in the West, that have the products. We're in over 1,000 stores or something like that and growing. In the East, in the East we have some distribution. There's a pretty neat little distributor up there called Garden Spot Distributors, and they go out, I think, like the Mothers, or is it Moms on the East? I get them confused. Anyway, but we're talking to some larger store chains now, and there's a lot of interest. But like anything, when you've got a new product and you don't have distribution quite set up yet for some of these stores, it takes a little bit of time to get in the review periods and get an approval and get it slotted in the stores. There's just a process you need to go through.
Well, it's a unique concept, and I've seen other products like milk and other things in the pouches, and I know there's science behind it and has to do with microorganisms, et cetera, bacteria, but I'm actually surprised that seafood can be held that long for 2 years. So when you put it, you're actually vacuum packing it inside these pouches, and then it's shelf-stable for 2 years.
Yes, sir. So the technology has been around for a few years now, and we actually worked with Oregon State University. Oregon Sea Grant. They have a seafood lab up in Astoria, Oregon. They did all the original R&D. And we've got a multi-laminate pouch that has an excellent oxygen barrier. Again, this technology has been around for a handful of years with nylon, quite common in Europe and over in the Asian countries, and just coming on board here in the U.S. But so we've got an excellent laminate there that we put the product, the soup, into. We pull all the air or all the O2 out of the pouch, seal it, and then we cook it in that pouch. And so that's what makes it shelf-stable.
And you see you have 6 different products you're coming out with now, or have come out with, or extra seafood dinners that you just throw it in the microwave and then pour it on the plate or in the bowl?
Exactly. That simple. And they taste, you might think that the taste wouldn't be that good, but one testimony, one of our products, Seafood Bisque, we actually entered it in the Fancy Food Show Product of the Year, and it's a pretty coveted award. There were like over 450 entries. We were one of 11 finalists for that trophy, and that's a pretty incredible testimony
That
there.
Is.
And these are
big, you're right.
Big
My
time,
gosh.
Yeah, big time companies want this award, and heavy competition, and we were one of 11. They just taste incredible. Just can't emphasize that enough, really. I mean, that's what we hear all the time, and we're setting up at the Fancy Food Show now in San Francisco. And we'll sample these products over the next 3 days. And the looks that we'll get on people's faces, even chefs, store owners, it's an incredible testimony to really the Oregon State who did the original recipe development.
Very interesting. Now, I want to talk about your Kickstarter project, which goes along hand-in-hand with some of the other products that you've been doing. You're introducing a non-dairy seafood soup, and you've got this Kickstarter project that, where you're asking people to make pledges to help you bring that product to the market. Can you kind of explain a little bit about that new product?
Sure. So in our marketing efforts and working with a lot of the smaller independent co-op stores that kind of they emphasize on carrying products that people that have certain allergies and things like that, usually shop at those stores for those types of products. And what we heard from them was, hey, if you're going to do something that's seafood-based, can you do something that's dairy-free, and especially like a clam chowder? So we looked at that. We looked at the market. There's a few tomato-based products out there and a few smaller artisanal brands, but no one's really doing it in a bigger way. And so we feel that that would be a good product to add to our mix. So we want to develop two products. One will be a dairy-free, and, of course, they're going to be the same things with our other products. They'll be gluten-free. We're a gluten-free facility and non-GMO, and we really use top-end ingredients in our products. And so the other one would be, one would be the clam chowder. The other would be an Oregon shrimp bisque. So we have these wonderful pink shrimp that are harvested off the coast of Oregon. It's a sustainable, clean fishery. It's a wonderful tasting shrimp, and we want to make a bisque out of that. So our goal is to launch those two products. Now, the reason we're using Kickstarter is we simply right now don't have the money required for the R&D and all the packaging to launch those two products. If we're not successful in Kickstarter, we may do this in about 2 years' time, but we'd like to launch them sooner. So the crew got together, and we have a younger, pretty aggressive crew, and they thought, hey, let's do this Kickstarter thing. So they put it together and did a great job. And so we're hoping to raise the support, but we need a lot of people. We need probably a couple thousand people, which is not insurmountable, but it's a lot. We need to get the news out so we can get that support.
Yeah, if everybody wants to go to Kickstarter.com, you can find out more about the project he's talking about. And you're trying to raise $50,750, I believe is the goal. And there's a lot of information there about the new product. There's a video there. And they have different backers, like most Kickstarter programs, where you can donate as low as a dollar up to whatever you're able to afford. And it sounds like a really interesting project, and a new product that people are going to be looking for, because I think it says in your Kickstarter program that there was something like, is it like 5 million people who are lactose intolerant?
Yeah, no, actually the number, and I didn't do this research, part of our crew did, but it's like 30 to 50 million.
Oh, 30 to 50 million. Wow.
Yeah, lactose intolerant people. And then there's, you know, many more than that that have chosen to eliminate dairy from their diet for one reason or another. And so that's the driving fact, you know, that's what's driving us to create these products is it seems like, you know, we're kind of a niche driven company, because we produce a very high end product. It's not something you're going to find in mainstream grocery. It's more the specialty food stores that you find us in.
Okay. If people want to find out more about you, they can go to seafarepacific.com. You can also go to oregonseafood.com, and also on Facebook, you have a page there that gives them more information, and they can actually hit the links that takes them to the Kickstarter project. And, Mike, I appreciate you taking time to come on our show and tell us about your products and your company and your new project, and we wish you the best. And hopefully the people out there listening to our show will go and help support your new project.
And we appreciate that. You know, the thing about that Kickstarter project is that, you know, we're not asking for money for nothing. You know, there's a reward system there, and you can actually get some of our products. You can choose those as a reward. And then, of course, nothing, the project won't fund unless we collect all the monies that we're asking for. So, you know, please go there, support us. Be happy to send you some products, and look forward to seeing our stuff out there on the East Coast very soon in a bigger way.
And thank you very much, and good luck out there at the Fancy Food Show there in San Francisco.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Thanks. All right, everybody, check out the website, and you can find out more information about the Kickstarter project. We're going to take a quick little break. And, Aaron, are you sticking with us?
I may have to get off for just a minute.
All right. Well, you know you can always come back. And I'm going to take a little break and play a little bit of Junie Fisher, who's going to be our guest later on today, one of her older songs. I'll wait to play the new songs when she gets here, but the song's called Horse Like You. We'll take a break. We'll be bringing on our next guest from A Shallow Farm. Everybody hang tight. We'll be talking herbs in just a few minutes. ¶¶
when I haven't combed my hair. And if I'm not wearing makeup, you don't care. It doesn't matter one iota to ya when my lipstick is askew. I'm lucky to have a horse like you. When I say let's go for a ride, you go along. And I'm singing while I ride, you like my song. You got shoulders I can lean on. You're a pal who pulls me through. I'm mighty lucky to have a horse like you. I'll admit I've had some horses. I've traded, shipped, and sold. But you're the one and only horse I'll ride till I get old. And you'll get us home. If everybody had a horse that was their friend, all the strife and trouble in this world would end. When I get to heaven, let me have a pasture view. 'Cause if it's heaven, I'll have a horse like you. I'm mighty lucky to have a horse like you.
And we're back, and that was Junie Fisher, Horse Like You. Junie will be joining us with some new music later on around the 12:30 segment, and we're going now to switch gears from seafood to herbs, and this is another company that located on Kickstarter. As you can tell, Kickstarter is one of my favorite spots to find entrepreneurs and new food products, and these folks are in the herb business. They're called Ashala Farms. I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Ashala Farms, and we're bringing them on here. Press this button. You should be there. Good morning, guys. Are you there?
Good morning. Yes, this is Elise.
Hi, Elise. This is Jeff. I guess Jeff's not going to be joining us.
He is. We're going to kind of switch off a little bit because we don't have the speakerphone.
Little tag team. Well,
exactly.
We have Jeff and Elise Higley joining us, and as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about herbs. And I saw your company on Kickstarter and saw a little bit. I learned a lot actually by watching your Kickstarter video and reading your information about the herb business that I didn't know. And I thought this is a great topic to have you come on and tell us a little bit about herb farming, and then we can talk about your project and what you're doing on Kickstarter. So first question is, how long have you guys been in the herb business?
I have been studying with herbs for about 20 years. And Jeff has been primarily growing vegetables and doing farmers markets and CSAs. And about 4 years ago or something, he started getting into more of growing herbs because I was buying them and for my different products that I do. And we were realizing that as we started researching the companies we were buying them for, that most of them were coming imported. And so we thought, well, this is ridiculous. Why are we importing herbs and trying to make a good product? Why don't we just grow them ourselves?
Right.
So
and I'll interrupt you there for a second. That was the one thing that I was intrigued about when I read your Kickstarter project was how much of the herbs that come into the U.S. from other countries, and we do such a small amount in the U.S.
Right.
I mean, what percentage is it? I mean, it's like less than, 15% is grown here?
Yeah, anywhere from 30 to 15, right? So it's, and part of it is the problem is why we're doing the Kickstarter is because there's a lot of startup cost to get into that industry if you're doing it on a bigger, you know, bigger scale than just being able to, like we did the last couple of years, drying it in our house and in indoor environments where you have all the herbs hanging up, to be able to really be a quality supplier and to know that you're getting a product that is safely dried, which means that it didn't, you know, mildew doesn't start or mold or having bugs and things that people obviously don't want in their product. To do that, you have to dry them in a dryer that has a fan and heat system in it that is regulated and that moisture can't come in and start to dampen it again. So,
now what herbs do you got? What do you guys grow there on your farm?
Yeah, so we grow, we have about 30 different varieties or crops of herbs that we're growing this year. And,
wow. How many acres do you have?
We have 15 acres of herbs that we'll be planting this year. But we can't plant them all unless we have the herb dryer because we can grow them. Jeff's an amazing farmer. We can grow them, but there's no sense of growing that quantity and not being able to dry them properly. So that's
well, Laurie can attest that I bought this little herb plant at Walmart, and I've got a rosemary, a peppermint, a basil,
cilantro,
and cilantro sitting in the window. But I'm the world's worst green thumb guy because they seem to get all scraggly on me and don't grow too well. But I love fresh herbs, so I admire somebody who's got 15 acres.
Probably giving them too much attention.
Probably.
Herbs are pretty hardy. Yeah.
I probably water them too much or not enough, but anyway, I do like fresh herbs when we do cooking and all. So your Kickstarter project, the goal is to raise the money to get the proper drying equipment that you need. You're going to have all these herbs that you'll be growing, but you got to have a way to dry them, and that's what your Kickstarter project is about.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's basically a separate building. It's a drying facility.
I was looking today, you're trying to raise, what, $25,000, and you've raised like $7,600 so far. You got 124 backers with 9 days to go. And
exactly.
I guess you're getting down to the wire now. And everybody who's listening, by the way, if you want to check out Starter Project, you can, first of all, they got a Facebook page, which is Oshawa Farm. You can go to and find them on Facebook, or you can go to Kickstarter and kick in Oshawa Farms, and there's a link here on our website to their website, and you can find out more about the Kickstarter. So back to this question on the herbs themselves that come from overseas. So you're telling me most of the stuff, like we go buy spices, most of that stuff is coming from overseas. I did not know that.
Correct. Yeah, even if it's a U.S. company, you'll have to, I'm not sure why they don't have to say on the label where the spices come from, but it'll look like it's a U.S. company. But if you actually contact the company, the herb or spice itself is actually not probably from their place.
Very interesting.
And the reality is that most of the herb suppliers in this area, the wholesalers, they all really want to support local, domestically grown product. We are super fortunate that we're getting contracts and lots of interest from wholesale buyers. But like I said, the reality is the reason that more people don't get into this industry is there is a large, you know, that's just one of the things we need to make this happen. We're funding the other things in different ways and, you know, our life savings and those kinds of things. certain cultivating equipment and a lot of hand picking and we're part of an internship program with Rogue Farm Corps, so we have two interns that will be joining us this year learning about how to also cultivate medicinal herbs so that we can spread that knowledge and hopefully more and more farms every year start growing more of these herbs so we have less imported material coming in and, you know, reducing the carbon footprint and just making a good environmental impact on the industry.
But what's the easiest herb to grow?
Oh my gosh. You know, I mean some of the like, you know, lemon balm or something, people are like, I can't get rid of it. It's too much. So, you know, the great thing is you can make teas with fresh herbs too, so you don't need to dry them, but when you're looking at wholesale accounts, they definitely want the product dried and you're talking pounds of a plant that you need to dry at one time and be able to rotate that out quick enough to take your next harvest to the dryer. So.
Well, does Jeff want to talk to us, or is he afraid to come on radio?
No, actually, he's in the middle of putting a greenhouse up, so that's why he's running back in. He's got somebody he's working with out there.
Oh, okay.
So. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Don't take it away from his work. You're doing fine.
No,
you know,
it's okay.
Just, like, standing there. I didn't know if you guys had like a tag team that was ready to tag at the corner and come
yeah,
into
no,
the rest
we are.
Of the afternoon.
He should be coming in any minute. So yeah, we got all the things to get ready for the greenhouse. You know, to get the plants in, to time everything right, to get all timed around putting them in the dryer. So, and before I pass the phone on to Jeff, I just want to say that we're really not even looking at like how much people donate, but just even putting in a dollar would be so amazing just to show people's support that they want
support.
To see more U.S. grown herbs. So I'm
going
to pass the phone on to the farmer,
pass
okay?
Pass the phone to him because I got a stupid farming question that maybe he can answer.
Good morning.
Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us on.
Oh, you're welcome. We were just learning all about herbs and how things are shipped in from overseas and talking about herbs. And I'm going to ask a stupid question because I don't know anything about herbs, but are they perennials? They grow all the time, or do you have to replant them?
It depends. A lot of them are perennial. I mean, a lot of the culinary herbs are perennial. Some are annuals. Some are biennial. So we're harvesting roots that take 2 or sometimes 3 years to grow, or we're looking for a certain flower or a certain seed that takes a couple of years. But I'd say 50% to 70% are perennials, yeah.
Interesting, because I was earlier conversation. I'm growing some in my window, and they seem to be annuals in my case because they don't seem to last very long. But I
no.
well, I will tell you this: the only reason Brilliant asked that question is because he learned the word perennial this week.
That's right. That was my new word
of the week. I needed to try to figure out a way to fit in the show.
You got to use those new words as best you can, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That was in the Reader's Digest, what do you call it, the new word of the day, so perennial. But we were talking about earlier about your Kickstarter project and the money you're trying to raise for that. And I want to mention again that people, if you want to help them out to buy the new dryer and help them basically to use U.S. herbs instead of overseas herbs, go check out their Kickstarter project and donate as little as a dollar or as much as you can, and there's all kinds of rewards available based on how much you donate. And you got 9 more days left, Jeff, but I think you might, maybe you'll make it with some help from some of our listeners, and you're getting there. If you don't hit the 25, I guess then you have to kind of rethink the project again, but maybe you'll make it there the next day.
Yeah, we're keeping our fingers crossed, and we're definitely doing the best we can here at the end to get the word out there. And, I think we have a good project. We have some really good incentives. We're basically asking people to pre-buy our products, and we're gonna plant those herbs, start the seeds, plant the herbs, weed them, we'll water them, we'll harvest them. We're going to dry them in that new dryer that people helped build, and then we're going to send them out to you guys. It's a great thing. We got a lot of great products we're putting out there on the Kickstarter and some good incentives. So we're not just asking for donations. We're really asking people to buy into our vision and help support us by doing what we do best, which is growing plants and getting products to people. But we need this dryer in order to make the product safe, get it to them in a good quality and high potency, and to deal with the quantities that we're dealing with, we just need a better drying facility.
Now, Jeff, watch this. You know, Mr. Funny Business on the other side, my sidekick, A.A. Ron, making fun of me with perennials. Okay, A.A. Ron, you got any fancy questions to ask on your side?
No, I don't have any fancy questions at all. I like herbs. But I like all kinds of herbs. It's whatever. I like herbs that are legal, that are not legal, whatever. It's herb, I like. So, it's how we go. But I'm actually very interested. I will probably be going and making a donation to their Kickstarter as soon as I get to the house, because this is a big deal. To be able to have a U.S. manufactured, U.S. grown herb that can be sustained, can be used to support. I mean, the culinary world needs that. We definitely need to support that. I mean, that's something that really does, kind of hits home
And I think, you know, they deserve all the support they can get, and they'll definitely get support from me.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, I mean, people don't even realize it. It says right there in the bottle, oh, you know, it could be a U.S. company, but all this stuff's coming from overseas, and a lot of it's coming from China and Eastern Europe and North Africa, and just what the major importers are seeing is just really poor quality, a lot of contaminants, a lot of adulteration. You know, they're opening up bags of thyme that's full of glass and stuff. So, you know, really about getting good quality product right in our region, right, you know, right here, domestic U.S., grown by farmers who care, family farmers, and taken care of in the right way. And, you know, we just can't, there's nothing out there in the world that they don't care about it the same way that we care about it here in the U.S. and care about the people that are getting this end product. And certified organic or not, it's not coming in to the country done properly. So we need to really take hold of this in the U.S.
It's like a worthy project, and everyone who's listening, go help them out on their Kickstarter project. And a little play on words, we're running out of time, and
that happens. Well, we really appreciate you guys giving us an opportunity to talk about our project and putting it out there for us and all the support.
Yeah, oh, thank you for what you're doing. I wish you the best.
And keep us posted on how it goes, and I hope you hit your goal.
Will do. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Take care.
All right, have a great
day. All right, everybody, check out their website. Go to Kickstarter and support their project. And by the way, A.A. Ron, I believe that illegal herb is a perennial.
Oh, is that what it is? It's a perennial?
I believe so.
I figured it is a perennial. I only know that because I heard a guy who said he knows a guy who knew somebody's cousin, uncle, brother back in the day. Said they knew it just grew all year. So that's the only reason I know.
That's the only reason you know it. Yeah, right. All right. Hey, Laurie, before we go to our last guest, Jenny Fisher, we've got a few minutes here. Like, let me see. We got about five, 6 hours. Oh, wait a minute. What are you going to say, Paleo Man?
I actually have to run. So I wanted to let you guys know that that I have to go. I'm being beckoned as we speak right now.
Well, you should go. Then.
But yeah, I actually have to run. And
I would say we'll miss
awesome.
You, but I won't. But we really won't.
I know. I'm actually going to miss Laurie a lot because I always do miss Laurie. But I hope Graham can choke on a chicken neck bone.
Goodbye.
Have a nice weekend. Say hi to Lorna. Okay, bye-bye.
I will. Bye, guys.
All right. And, okay, now we got rid of him. Do you want to talk about any food news, Laurie?
I have more celery stuff that I wanted to finish.
Oh, more celery stuff. We didn't finish celery. I forgot.
No.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, there's other really good interest. Okay. Celery aids as a digestion. So some say celery tastes like crunchy water, and that is the reason it is so good for your digestive system. It contains the good salts. Yes, celery does contain sodium, but it is not the same thing as table salt. The salt in celery is organic, natural, and essential for your health, and it cares for your eyes. Our large stalk of celery can deliver up to 10% of your daily need for vitamin A, a group of nutrients that protects the eyes and prevents age-related degeneration of your vision. Also, it lowers blood pressure. An active component in celery has been proven to boost circulatory health. Raw whole celery reduces high blood pressure.
Very interesting. I never know when you're finished, so that's why I'm kind of delaying here.
Well, there are some useful tips. You want to hear that?
I knew there was
boring.
More. Yes. What is your useful tip for celery?
It says, and most people I would think know this, when you choose celery, you choose them with the upright stalks that snap when bent. The leaves should be fresh and crisp. And when selecting the celery, always remember the rule of thumb is the darker the color, the stronger the flavor. Freshly chopped celery retains its nutrients better than if you chop and store it a few hours later. And listen to this, I was surprised. Steamed celery not only retains its flavor, but it also most of its nutrients, so up to 99% of them, in fact. Because lots of times they say, you know, if you steam it, you lose its, you know, the nutrients, but in celery, it doesn't.
I like celery and chicken stock and
making
soup. I do
too. Mm-hmm.
So are we done with our helpful hints on celery?
Ta-da! I'm done.
Speaking of celery, I once had a stalker, but that's a whole other story. I guess we're going to play.
Yeah, we have
play
some of them.
Yeah, we do. Unfortunately, we do. And they listen to the show all the time.
Oh, yeah. Every move.
Yeah. Every move we make. Okay, mm-hmm. So let's play. What time is it? It's 12:20. Actually, who's saying to play this music because Junie's not going to be joining us for 10 minutes. Got another song? No song. Got another story?
Story? I have a couple of them. I have to see what I want. Oh, I forgot the Super Bowl.
I'm trying to waste time. Let's see. 9, 10, 15, 15. Yeah. Hey, give me another 5-minute story.
Fun one. The Super Bowl leading surge in avocado consumption. Here we go with our avocados. I do miss them, though, from when I was in California with you. Ugh.
Oh. Well, yeah, but here
and
they're
the
like $2 a piece. There they're like a dime a piece.
I know.
It says
the Haas avocado. I know. Yep, and they taste so good. The Haas Avocado Board has estimated that avocado consumption around the Super Bowl weekend will top 100 million pounds this year, representing a 30% increase over 2013.
Huh. A lot of guacamole.
Amazing. 100 million pounds. A lot of guacamole. It says we have seen consistent growth for many years, and since 2000, consumption during the Super Bowl period has increased 1,200%. They added that the amount of guacamole served nationwide on Super Bowl Sunday could fill New Jersey's MetLife Stadium from end zone to end zone at a depth of more than 40 feet.
Really?
For New Jersey.
It's interesting, coming from California. Let me interrupt you for 1 second. Coming from California, even though you said 1,200% increase, is that what you said?
Yes. Yep. 1,200%.
See, but that shows you how awful it is because all the California avocado growers are going under because of the cost of operations and the cost of insurance and the cost of land and the cost of water and the cost. And all that extra volume is being gobbled up by imported product from other countries.
Yeah, well, you're right. That's the next line, as a matter of fact. It says the major supplier of avocados for this most anticipated sports holiday is Mexico.
Yep.
And Mexico has been sending more than 30 million pounds of avocados to the U.S. on a weekly basis. And
30 million pounds a week?
Wait to hear this. And the number will increase to more than 40 million pounds per week as the Super Bowl approaches.
That's
per
amazing.
Week. Is
That's
that? I can't even comprehend
wow.
it. It is. Yep. It says we actually kicked off promotions on December 30th to take advantage of the college Super Bowl games. I'm sorry, college bowl games. You can tell I don't know football. And after that, we moved right into Super Bowl promotions, and then we will follow with the Winter Olympics.
Huh.
I have one last line, if I can.
Yes, go ahead.
Got to finish it. Okay. It says avocado sales have increased dramatically in the past decade, with total U.S. consumption now topping the 1.7 billion pounds on an annual basis, and they soon expect that to reach 2 billion pounds per year.
That's amazing.
Should we move to Mexico and start growing avocados?
That's why I say I don't want to get on my soapbox here, but it's sad because when I lived in California, they literally were going out of business because most of the guys can't afford the water, and they got all these crazy laws about herbicides and what have you, and the cost of land, and they're all going under, yet avocados continue to sell like hotcakes, literally.
Hotcakes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow. Oh, well. Yep. Mexico is the place to grow your avocados, obviously.
Yep.
And on that note, I'm going to play some music because we wasted enough time to do it now. Judy Fisher. And by the way, you are finished with your story. I know you always want to go to the last period. Everything's about avocados, right?
I'm done with the avocado story.
All right. Our next guest is Junie Fisher, and we tried to have Junie Fisher on last week, but we had all those crazy technical difficulties, so she's been kind enough to – she'll be coming on today, and we're going to be playing some of her music. And I believe this is her best music ever, and it has some soulful sound, and she's, a lot of her stuff is Western music, and
mm-hmm.
this still has a Western
sound to it, but it doesn't have that twang. And I think it's some of the
right.
better music that she has. So anyway, blah, 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 keep talking. I'll play the music. I'll play one of her songs. It's kind of a bluesy-sounding song. It's called Want of a Nail, and you'll understand what that means when you hear the song. And then we'll be bringing on Jenny Fisher. Hopefully she'll be here by the time the song is over. Everybody hang tight. We'll be right back.
Little baby people born barefoot, baby horses born that way too, and everybody happy till they figure everybody gotta have shoes. So the bootmaker takes care of the people, and a horseshoer hammers on the shoes. Everybody happy till a nail comes out, and everybody singing the blues for want of a nail. For the want of a nail, a clinch pops up and the nail gets lost. Shoe gets to sliding till it swings right off. The horse goes lame on the rocky road, the rough and rocky road to hell, for want of a nail. Well, the North and the South had an uncivil war. They might be fighting still, but the Confederacy, they were kind of going broke. Probably couldn't pay the farrier bill for want of a nail. For the want of a nail, clinch pops up and the nail gets lost. Shoe gets to sliding till it swings. Soldier gets a foot when he got no heart on the rocky road to hell for the want of a nail. Thank you. long. You get the spot until it swings right off. We all get a foot when we got no fall on the rocky road to hell. For the want of a nail, for the want of a nail, for want of a nail, for the want. Pay cash.
And that was Junie Fisher, Want of a Nail. I love that song, and we have Junie Fisher joining us this morning once again. Welcome back, Junie. Great, great new music.
Thank you. Thank you for playing that for me.
Oh, I love that song, and you wouldn't think of that. You know, always, your Western music has a certain twang, but I love your new music because it crosses all kinds of people are going to love this.
Well, thanks. The album has gotten just tremendous response from the horse community, and from people that just dislike music. But it's just been a tremendous response, and it was sure fun to write the album.
Well, it is really good stuff, and thank you again for joining us. And sorry about last week; we had some technical difficulties, and I appreciate you coming back this week
to
play some of your music.
And
it does happen around here. It happens around here too much, but thank you for coming on. And everybody, we've had Junie on before. I guess it was about a year ago we had you on, and you were a big hit then, and I hope you're a big hit again. And I love, like I said, love the music. And tell everybody kind of about the background stories on your new album and what you've been working on in the studio. And I guess because when you last talked, I think you were just starting the album.
Yeah, I think that's so. I think I was just working on the songs and getting ready to record. And, you know, it was a long project that I had wanted to do, but boy, I just could not wrap my brain around digging in that deep and being that exposed, for me, being that exposed writing some of those songs, because I had to go back to places that, you know, it's like somebody that writes a story and somebody says, oh, gee, you know, you went through this wreck and you came through all these things and you need to write your story. And for those people that have been through those things, it takes a while to get to in a place in your brain where you can wrap your brain around that. How do I tell the story without feeling like I'm laying my heart and guts out on the table? And I had to find a way that I could write these songs without it being, you know, because this was a catharsis for me to go back and write this album. I had to get back in my writer's brain and say to myself, okay, it's okay to go here, and I'm okay now. I had to give up riding for a part of my life, and I could still ride, but I couldn't compete where I was competing before. I had some injuries that just made me say, okay, it's time to retire from this. And I'm not talking about just going for a ride. I'm talking about high-level, high-risk horse sports.
Right.
And I just felt I couldn't do them anymore. But I'm back with a vengeance and going great guns.
Well, it's
been good. Grabbing me by both arms and saying, come on, you can come back and you can still do this. And they dragged me back in. And I kicked and screamed for the first little bit. And okay, I'm back.
Well, the cool story is, I believe the album called Listen? Is that the name of the new album?
Yes, it's called Listen.
And that's the cool story behind that. That song is actually being used on a Kickstarter project for a new movie, and I wanted you to tell a little bit about that to the listeners, too. But I love that song, too. We'll play it after you tell the story. But what's going on with the movie?
Well, my friend Mark Rashid, who is a wonderful horseman and clinician and writer, and he's also a singer and songwriter as well, and a lot of people don't really realize that, but he's just wonderful. anyway, he had told me, he had called me last year, I think it was about in January or maybe February, and said, you know, I had this story and I wrote a screenplay and we've got some interest in it, and I want you to think about participating in it in some way, and let me send you the script. And he sent me the script, and I called him back, and I said, oh, my gosh, Mark, this is a great story. And I said, you know, I've got some songs. I'm just about to do a new album. I've got some songs that will really fit. And he was real quick to say, oh, well, we've got people working on the music. I go, no, I've got some that will really fit. And then about 2 months later, I had just recorded the album, but it wasn't out yet. And I ran into him on the road. We were both out in California, and I went to the home of some people that were hosting one of his clinics. And we sat around and you know, did a little guitar circle and played songs all night.
Right.
And I sang him the song Listen. And he kind of rocked back and looked at me and goes, is that on the new album? And I said, yeah. Oh. So he shared the album with the producer and director, and they said, wow, this fits. So they used that on the short trailer that they're using on Kickstarter, and I have to say, even objectively, it does really fit the story, and it really fits the trailer, and I'm just tickled to death. And if I get something in the soundtrack of the movie, if we get the Kickstarter thing to go through for us, I am delighted as all can be, and also delighted to help my friend tell a really true and really real Western and horse story. My friend's deal with this is not to turn it loose to a big production company, and they've had some interest, but they'd have to relinquish control, and he doesn't want to do that because it becomes another iffy horse movie where the horse comes in and rears up and whinnies.
Right. Right.
And we're not having that.
I like that. And what is the name of the movie?
The name of the movie is Out of the Wild.
Out of the Wild.
And it's a story of a man who has kind of hit the bottom. He's a cowboy, a contemporary cowboy, who was involved in an accident where he lost his wife and his child and felt responsible. And so he put the bottle to his head and pulled the trigger and started a downward spiral and just taking himself to the bottom of the bucket. And he goes to the last job that he thinks he can possibly take, and for him he thinks it's the worst place he could possibly go, and that's to a dude ranch. And those of us who have worked around good quality dude and guest ranches know that that's not the case, but that's how a lot of people in the cowboy business feel. But he goes there, and that's really the last job he can get, and he meets someone who is really a remarkable horseman, and that's the owner of this ranch. And she is a woman who's got a family ranch, and the way she can hold on to it is to run a guest ranch out of there. She starts teaching him ways to deal with a Mustang that's been through sort of a tough life, and there are a lot of parallels between this horse's life and this man's life. And he sees the door opening, and little by little he redeems himself. And it's a beautiful story, but it's so heartfelt in telling it, and in telling it through understanding what that horse is going through in the processes. It's just, when I read the script, I called Mark back immediately because I've turned down other things for film projects. They just didn't fit what I truly believe in, or didn't, you know, they just weren't real enough. And this was real because it's written by a horse. So I'm very excited.
Tell you a great story, and let's play the song Listen, which is used in the Kickstarter project, and everybody hang tight. We'll come back and talk to Jenny about a little bit more about the movie and also what her plans are as far as her tours and where she'll be appearing. So everybody hang tight. The song is called Listen, and we'll be right back after we hear this new music, and it's great, by the way. Thank you.
it's of our kind. To do as we're told, our nature says run. We're taught to be bold, but if you were the horse and if I were to ride, I'd want you to know we're on the same side. For once, would you try to hear?
Jeannie Fisher, her new song Listen from the same CD called Listen. And Jeannie, great stuff. I can actually relate to that song as a being on the radio. I wish people would just listen. We would have a much better radio.
What a pretty song.
Well, it relates to people too, you know. Sometimes communications fall down because we're just not listening to that other person, to what they are trying to say. And
another one of my friends, well, it was Rex Allen Jr., called me and he said, you know, have you thought about this, making that a human relationship song? And I said, no, but, you know, he said, because it's about people, too. And I said, I get that. Mm-hmm. It's staying it is, but yeah, I get that.
No, I get it, too. I mean, actually, my grandfather used to say, God gave you one mouth and two ears, and that's so you should listen twice as much as you talk. That's great, great music, and this is being played as the intro for the Kickstarter project for the new movie, Out of the Wild. And if people want to find that, they can go to Kickstarter. I think just punch in Out of the Wild, they can find out more about the movie and see the video. It's really a cool project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, the immediate response when we put that up was just tremendous, and we now have, I think it's about 18 days left to go. Let me kick onto the project right now to take a look. I think we've got about 17 days to go, and we need to raise a lot of money. It's a $775,000 goal to make a motion picture.
Wow.
And that's putting the budget as they trimmed everything they could, and they have a lot of us making contributions of our times and talents without charging to make that happen at that kind of a budget. And so that's what it's going to take. And Kickstarter, as some people may know or may not know, Kickstarter is an all-or-nothing thing. So when you make your pledge to Kickstarter, the person that's getting the pledge only gets the money if they raise the full amount.
Right.
So if they are not able to raise $775,000 on Kickstarter, nobody pays.
The prior guests before you are all from Kickstarter also. We find a lot of folks on Kickstarter who are entrepreneurs and have really cool ideas.
Yeah.
But, you know, it takes money to make things happen, and so that's Kickstarter, where Kickstarter fits in. And you can give as little as a dollar or as much as you want, and that's the neat thing about it, be part of all these projects.
And, you know, we would love to have a million people each give $1. If a million people each give $1, we'd more than meet our goal. And at this point, we've got close to $87,000. You know, we could just jump that right up. Think about what you spend to go to a movie for a couple of tickets to go to a movie. Well, for what you'd spend for a couple of tickets and popcorn, you can be one of the backers, and you get the DVD to have at your home and a T-shirt. And there are other opportunities on this program for people could even be in the movie. They can be in as an extra. They could go home with the truck that's used in the movie. It just depends on how much they're willing to put up. But I tell people, you know, put up what you put up for to go to a movie and buy a bucket of popcorn and two drinks. For most people, that's about $30 for two people.
Right.
And put that in, and you would get a DVD for that. And what a great opportunity to get to see the movie. But you could also be in the movie. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that would be cool. Hey, Larry, I think we need to empty out our piggy banks. I would look good as, well, a leading man, of course, but I could be an extra. I would like a cowhand.
Of course, yeah. And at this point, the director and producer really want to use John Deal, who's a great actor who's been around Hollywood for a long time. You've seen him in NCIS and other films, always as a sideman, and he did a great job on the trailer, and he's got the right face and the right look about him, and they're really determined to use him. He's been so loyal to this project, so I'm really hoping that all works out. And there were people that suggested, gee, you should have somebody like Kevin Costner. Well, that would be great, but they'd have to give up control, and it would become Kevin Costner's movie and not the movie that
he's
So they're very determined to tell the story the way it needs to be told, and that's what independent films do.
Right.
Well, I hope they hit their goal.
It really sounds like a really great story for a movie.
It really does.
And I wanted to ask you before, because we're running short on time here, tell us about Junie Fisher, where you headed and what you're up to as far as concerts and other things going on in your life.
Next weekend I'm headed down to Jasper, Georgia. I'm home for a month in Franklin, Tennessee, which is so rare. Last year I spent a total of less than 40 days at home.
Wow.
So I've come home for a month to spend a little time here at home with my husband. Now, that's not to say I don't see my husband for a whole year. He flies out to meet me. That way. So he'll fly out and meet me on the road, spend a little time together. But I'm home for a month, and then next weekend I run down to Jasper, Georgia, to do a show for a saddle club down there. Then I'll fly out to California, pick up my touring rig, and head to Arizona. And then I come back, go back to California. I've got some cutting horse shows to go show at, and then I'll be headed towards Oklahoma, Texas, up the Pacific Northwest, do a little tour up there, and be in the summertime.
Gosh.
I'll be in Colorado and Wyoming, and hopefully on set in New Mexico in August on the film. So.
How long have you been doing this? Because you're always on the go. I mean, how many years have you been on the road doing all that?
About 10 years on the road, doing it full-time. And before that, I did music as a part-time thing. But when I decided to do it, I put my toe off the edge for 2 years, and then I just stepped right off the cliff and said, let's do it. And it worked.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, you are
a
busy lady, and enjoy. I know you'd like to do fishing too. Last time we talked, you were into fishing. Have you done any fishing while you've been off?
Yes, I fly fish. My husband and I both fly fish. We fished last weekend here in Tennessee, and he'll fly out to meet me when I'm on the road in places where the fishing is good. That's when he'll come out. So I always try to schedule to be in July and August in places like Colorado. Because that's when
there
those are ideal times there. And my fly fishing buddies go, well, how is it that works out that, you know, you happen to be playing concerts in places where the fishing is good? And I just look at them and say, well, duh.
It's all planning.
It's all in the planning. So, yeah, we fished Colorado, and last summer had a nice little vacation in Colorado. And I don't, now that I'm on the road all the time, I don't fish as much as I used to. I used to fish more when I was on the road touring, but I'm riding more. So last year I took my cutting horse on tour with me from March through September, and then I parked her in Central California in September, and I had to run out to Texas for 2 weeks, and that was the first time I'd been out without her for as long as 2 weeks. But I had a best friend out there who kept her going for me, and then came back from having a break, you know, just hauling her around and playing with her on the road for the summer. And she came back and won, you know, came back and did a cutting show and won both her classes. So it was a
good
break for her, too, I guess.
Wow. Well, that's great.
But yeah,
well, we appreciate we appreciate you joining us today and sharing your new music. I love the new music, and I want to close out
Thanks.
The show here with the other one you said to me, which is called Who They Are. And another great song. And if people want to find out more about you, they can find you at JennyFisher.com. Or also, you've got a Facebook page which people can go and click on and find out more about that. And also, is the link? I think the link for the Kickstarter project is also on your Facebook page, right?
Yes. I keep reposting that regularly and encouraging people to share it. And people have really responded, have jumped in and supported this, and we appreciate every single person that supported. Sometimes they can give a dollar, and sometimes they can give $5, and we appreciate that so much. It would just really take, you know, half a million people giving if 250,000 people each gave $5 right now, we'd more than make our goal.
You'd be way over your goal. That's right. Well,
way
thank
over,
you again.
So,
we wish you the best on the project. Out of the Wild is the name of the movie, and also Jenny Fisher's new album. Go check it out on her website. Great, great music. You're welcome to come back anytime. Keep us posted about the movie, and wish you the best.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Everyone, like I said, check out her website, and we appreciate Jenny joining us. I'm going to play her last song. That she sent here to me. It's called Who They Are. Laurie, we're going to call it a day. We went through another foodie show, and
yes,
you can tell
did.
Everybody. Say good night, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
Everybody have a nice weekend. We'll see you next week. We've got a big show planned for next week. It's filled with foodies and music. So check us again next week on the show, and here we'll close out with the song, Junie Fisher, Who They Are. Everyone have a nice weekend. See you next week.
One little bird transcends its wings when by its nature begins to sing, much like the poet with his poem transcends his station, his flesh and bone. It's who they are. Gift of art is how he shows what's in his heart. The horseman's touch through calloused hand whispers a bridge between horse and man. It's who they are. It's who they are, it's why they breathe, it's what they hear, it's all they see, it's how they're born, it's how they're made, it's not their choice, they have no say, it's who they are. And if God sends inspiration to share these gifts on earth, then who are we to wonder if those gifts have any worth? If not for them, where would we turn? They fill a need, when will we learn? They feed our souls, it's not their choice. They didn't ask to be our voice. It's who they are. And if God sends inspiration to share these gifts on earth, then who are we to wonder if those gifts have any worth? If not for them, where would we turn? They fill a need, when will we learn? They feed our souls, it's not their choice. They didn't ask to be our voice. It's